cleanest way as possible. So without much ado, may I officially declare the meeting officially opened and welcome all of you, in particular the National Treasury representatives, the Acting Secretary of Parliament and her team, the Secretariat and our research team, and obviously the members themselves of this committee. The agenda is as circulated. I don't believe there are additional items that we have to add to the agenda, so we're going to stick to the agenda. Like I've indicated, we have got serious time constraints. In terms of the agenda, may we agree that the agenda is as is, no amendments. Thank you very much. Are there apologies, Secretary?
Good evening, co-chairpersons, members, and guests. We have apologies from Mr. Steenhuisen, Mr. Waters, Mr. Geiler, Mr. Shakimam, Ms. Coleman, Mr. Rebeer. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. As you can see, we do not necessarily correct for the purpose of this meeting, but I'm advised that we are not going to be taking decisions, and there should not be a problem in us proceeding with the meeting thereof. Without much ado, may I then invite the National Treasurer to make a presentation. Ms. Gillian Wilson, over to you. Thank you.
Good evening, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. My name is Gillian Wilson. I'm Chief Director in Public Finance Division in the National Treasury. This is my colleague, Alwe Malahutsi. He's from our legal unit in the Budget Office. I think just to start off with, I want to thank the committee, the Standing Committee, on the Financial Management of Parliament. I want to thank them for inviting us to do a presentation. I think we had a lot of questions on the issues identified by the committee, by the other committees, like the SCOA committees, on the E&E for Parliament and the budget process, but we were never invited to present formally to the committee. So this is the first invitation that was extended to the National Treasury to present on Parliament's budget process and also the publishing of the E&E. I think we, in terms of the content, we basically focused on the brief that was provided by the committee. So we basically are presenting on the three main issues that was in the letter that was inviting the National Treasury. The one is the budget process in terms of the legislation, the budget process of Parliament in terms of the legislation. So we did a few slides on the budget process. And then we did a slide on the publishing of the estimates of national expenditure. We call it the E&E by the National Treasury, of Parliament by the National Treasury. And then we also added a slide in terms of the technical support that we provided Parliament up to this point. And then I think throughout the slides, we basically have focused on the Parliament Act, that's the Financial Management of Parliament and Provincial Legislators Act. So most of the issues that we present on the slide, we are quoted out of the Act. Honourable Chairperson, just by means of the introduction, I think that fundamental to the budget process is that we have two acts where we appropriate funding to all organs of the state and parliament, and that is the Appropriation Act and also the Adjustments Appropriation Act. So every year we would publish and then take the Appropriation Act through Parliament and also the Adjustment Appropriation Act. It's important to note that Parliament's internal budget process is regulated by the Financial Management of Parliament and Provincial Legislative Act. And the Act was enacted in 2009 and then there was amendments in 2014. With the amendments in 2014, amongst others, it dealt with the Parliament's annual budget process and also the appropriations and approvals of Parliament's budget. The Act fundamentally also makes provision for Parliament to have its own internal appropriation process, whereby in accordance of its program structure, it appropriates funds from the Parliament's vote in the Annual Appropriation Act. In the next slide, we are just want to bring to the committee the main objectives or the main objects of the Financial Management of Parliament and Provincial Legislatures Act of 2009 as amended in 2014. So the objectives and what the Act want to achieve is to ensure transparency, accountability and sound management of revenue expenditure, assets and liabilities of Parliament. Important for us is that the Act also ensure a consultative relationship between Parliament and National Treasury at a high level, respecting Parliament's constitutional status. And above others, the Act also provides National Treasury with an opportunity to make comments on the proposed annual budgets and adjustment budgets of Parliament. It provides information on the proposed to provide the National Treasury with information on the proposed annual budget, adjustment budgets, and also the inclusion of the Parliament's budget in the national budget process and adjustment budgets, and also to provide the National Treasury with regular information on expenditure by Parliament. Honourable Chairperson, members, in this slide we just want to focus on Parliament's internal budget process that is guided by the Act. The accounting officer of Parliament must at least 10 months before the start of the financial year prepare a draft budget and present it to the executive authority of Parliament. And that's in terms of Clause 16(1) of the Act. It's very important that in terms of this clause, Parliament must provide information or distinguish between money appropriated through the annual national budget, information on the conditional and unconditional donor funds, and also funds derived from own revenue sources. I think for us also it's important that information is provided on the retained earnings of Parliament as to how that money is going to be spent. When Parliament does the internal budget process, it's also important that they specify proposed expenditure requirements per main divisions within the budget. And the main divisions refer to the programs of Parliament. Also specify the purpose of each division within a vote and provide explanations. The prescribed format of the budget must be consistent with the format of the other organs of the state. So with that, we mean that there should be consistency in terms of the classification of expenditure, compensation of employees, goods and services, financial assets, capital assets. And it must also be in terms of the program structure, your programs, your sub-programs, and so on. The next slide, we focus on the submission of Parliament's budget and adjustment budgets. It's important that the executive authority of Parliament must, in consultation with the Minister of Finance, determine the process for submitting Parliament's budget and adjustment budgets to the National Treasury. So it's very important that that consultation must happen between the Minister of Finance and the executive authority of Parliament. It's also important that there should be consultation with the Minister of Finance before the budget and adjustment budget are submitted to the National Treasury. And then obviously the Parliament must submit the budget and adjustment budget to the National Treasury. The executive authority of Parliament must also represent Parliament in any discussions with the Minister of Finance, and that's also in terms of Clause 17.1. Honourable members, it's also important that the executive authority must table in Parliament the budget for referral to the oversight mechanism. The draft budget and adjustment budgets must at least 1 month before the draft budget be submitted to the National Treasury. Any draft revisions, and that is revisions and shifting of budgets between programs, and approved allocations of Parliament's own funds must be discussed in that oversight process. In this slide, we deal with the annual appropriations and approval. I think it's important to note that after the Annual Appropriation Act is enacted, and that is the act which basically appropriate money to all organs of the state, national departments, and also to Parliament. Parliament must then internally appropriate money received from its vote in an annual appropriation act for each main divisions and program. So it's important that after the act is enacted, the appropriation act, that there must be an internal appropriation process within Parliament. And that process must also deal with the revision of the internal appropriation and also be approved by Parliament. The Act is also very clear that any funds that are direct charges not spent by Parliament by the end of financial year must be returned to the National Revenue Fund, and that's enclosed in terms of Clause 23 of the Act. I think with this slide, we come with the most important question that was raised by the committee. The annual fiscal framework, which includes the E&E, is tabled in Parliament on an annual basis for approval. The estimates of national expenditure consist of estimates and not approved budgets for institutions subject to the Appropriation Act. Only when the Act is enacted, it becomes the actual budget. And before that, it is just the estimate of expenditure. The budget is then appropriated through the Annual Appropriation and the Adjustments Appropriation Acts. For Parliament, Currently, the E&E and Appropriation Act only contains the total amount of appropriation for Parliament. Why? We don't publish the full details of Parliament's appropriation because in Section 18.1 of the Act requires that for each financial year, Parliament must, according to its main divisions, that's the programs, appropriate money received through the Appropriation Act. We cannot publish the full details when we provide the details of the other departments for Parliament, because the E&E may not preempt the outcome of this internal appropriation by Parliament. For all other votes, Parliament, through the Appropriation Act, determines the details of the appropriation. And then, once the Appropriation Act is enacted, Parliament should then, by a resolution, appropriate money received through the Appropriation Act. So that process happened after the Appropriation Act has been enacted. This will contain the detail of Parliament's appropriated budget, the purpose and the main divisions, the programs on a program level, the sub-programs, and also the classifications. The classifications is according to the compensation of employees, goods and services, capital assets, financial assets, and transfers and subsidies. So that is how we classify then the budget of your other organs of the state. And there should be some consistency between Parliament's budget and other departments' budgets. Honourable Chairperson, in this slide, we just want to reflect on the financial support that was provided to Parliament at this point. So we had an initial meeting in May 2015 after the Act to look at the effect of how National Treasury can basically assist the Parliament's officials. The main objective of the meeting was to assist Parliament with the implementation of the Act as amended, and also address the implications for the MTF and the E&E budget process. So with this meeting, we had a delegation from Public Finance, from our Budget Office, and also from the Government Technical Assistance Unit. So we had a meeting in terms of how we can assist Parliament with the implementation of the Act. And then after that, we also had a number of meetings that was held between the Office of the Accountant General and the CFO of Parliament and the head of the Treasury Advice Office to provide assistance for the establishment of the Advice Office in Parliament. I think in the meetings, we basically took Parliament through the internal budget process with the National Treasury. We also reflected on the regulations of the PFMA and how that can be sort of duplicated in Parliament. In November 2017, the Executive Authority of Parliament wrote to the Minister of Finance requesting a detailed publication of the E&E to ensure transparency. The National Treasury responded, indicated that in terms of Section 18 of the Act, once the Appropriation Act is enacted, Parliament should, by resolution, appropriate money received through the Appropriation Act according to the main programs. And then we normally have an annual meeting. We had our last meeting with Parliament between the National Treasury and Parliament was on 17 August, where we also wanted to give some technical support to Parliament in terms of their budgets and in terms of their submission to the National Treasury. Chairperson, I came to the end of my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. May I check in terms of the agenda where we have to deal with clarity scheme questions as to whether members of the committee have questions of clarity? Honorable Isaac? I'm going this way.
Chief Engineer, thank you for the opportunity. National Treasury, great to have you here. Thank you. Chief Engineer, on your slide, I think it's, well, maybe it's on page 4 here, but it's probably your slide 2. The last bullet, you know, an opportunity to make comments on proposed annual budgets, etc. What I'm trying to get just the gist of, does this happen? Slide 2, it's on my page 4 of National Treasury's presentation, and it says 2. So would that be slide 2, ma'am? There you go, that's the one, yeah. So that's slide 2, right? Or shall I work on page 4? Cool. All right, if I may. Yeah, the last bullet, or the last paragraph, they provide National Treasury with an opportunity to make comments on proposed annual budgets. What I'd like to know is, does this happen from your side? And then the last one is regular information on expenditure by Parliament. When you say regular, is there any time frame? How often? Is it every quarter? Is it every 6 months? How often does that happen? And then quickly, Chairperson, if we move to page 5, page 6, slide number 3, or is it slide number 5, Parliament's budget process under Act, specify purpose of each main division within the budget and then provide explanations. My question to National Treasury, is National Treasury satisfied with that process? Is it transparent enough? Is it happening? And then finally, Chairperson, before I allow my other colleagues, if you look at the last slide, bullet 2, the number of meetings that were held between the Office of the Accountant General and CFO to provide the assistance, as I alluded to earlier on, did this happen? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Let me start at the back where you are referring to the meetings we've been having with Parliament. That Parliament has been requesting the ENEs, the publication of ENEs. In those meetings, did you perhaps also discuss the issue of when will the Treasury Advice Office be in Parliament? When will it start? And over and above that, I would like to know when was this discussion started, and when did you become aware that Parliament perhaps needs that kind of assistance to have a Treasury Office in Parliament? And then we go to page 5 of your slide under the budget process, where you're indicating that accounting officers 10 months before the financial year, they prepare and table the budget and give it to the executive authority. And then some in your presentation, and as I read the Parliament Financial Management Act, it talks to the 1 month to National Treasury, and then there is another 10 days. I just misplaced my notes now. That it refers to. Is that then the case with Parliament in terms of the process of budget and your office? And are you satisfied with that process? And then again, on the same slide, on the disclosure of other revenues of Parliament, do you get them in time? And when you have to deal with your EMEs, are you aware of this, or do they come after? And what have you done as National Treasury to ensure that when they propose their budget and you have given your estimates and in assisting them to place the funds, like they are donor funding and everything else that is outside what you as Treasury have estimated, have you assisted them in terms of placing those kind of funding? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Co-Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. Firstly, I must say I'm surprised that this is the first time that National Treasury is appearing before this committee, because we've been asking for some time now. I mean, for all our meetings from the time we were constituted, we've been saying there's been some disjunct between the Office of Parliament, the Finance Office of Parliament, or those in charge of and National Treasury. So, but anyway, you are here now. So my first question will be, what kind of relationship exists between National Treasury and Parliament, those in charge of finance? Is it a cordial relationship? Is it a structured relationship, like my colleagues have asked? How often do you meet? How often should you meet? And what happens at those meetings? Because I can tell you for myself, I'm still a bit confused between the role of National Treasury and Parliament. And this is why we go for Parliament all the time. And we say, but you're not doing things according to National Treasury. So we'd like to hear those answers today. Are they doing it the right way? Are they doing it the wrong way? If they're not doing it correctly, have you been briefing them? What responsibility does National Treasury have in all of this, so that we as people who oversee this particular budget know exactly what's happening? Then in the 2014, after the 2014 amendments, you say here in your slide that Parliament has its own appropriation process. So now, have you had sight of that process as National Treasury? And are you satisfied with the steps that they follow? Because overall, you still have, although we look at Constitution, says Parliament, Executive, and Judiciary, overall, you still have responsibility of the finances, the taxpayers' money. National Treasury has that responsibility. Are you satisfied? Have you seen those processes? If you can just lead us onto that. And then my colleague referred to the last meeting that you had on 17th of August, which was just a few weeks ago. What was the outcome of the meeting? Was there anything constructive that emerged from that meeting that will take us forward and that will cause us not to ask the kind of questions that we usually ask? And I had one more question. Question page 9, page 5. Yeah. What structured process do you have? I think I asked you that. Do you have a process? Do you say every 3 months we should meet? Is it obligatory to meet, or is it just if somebody calls you, let's meet, let's not meet? So we just like to know, what is this relationship, formally and informally, between yourselves and Parliament? That will help us, in our further questioning. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Singh. Honorable Masanda. Thank you very much, Chairperson. No, mine really is a question that is aimed at finding out what the key timelines are in terms of addressing the issues in relation to the normalization process. My assumption is that the Treasury and Parliament are working together in an attempt to try and normalize the situation after a lengthy period of absence of engagement and or ongoing consultation. Now, if my assumption is correct, I want to have just a mental picture of the key timelines and the kinds of things that shall have happened, not later, in terms of sorting out the challenges.
Thank you, Honorable Masondo. Yeah, on the question
by Honorable Singh regarding the process. If the accounting officer of parliament could also just come in and indicate as to whether, as far as they are concerned, is there a process in place, like it's indicated here, that the executive authority of parliament must, after consultation with the Minister of Finance, determine a process for submitting Parliament's budget and adjustments budget to National Treasury. National Treasury is going to talk to this, but I also want to get your take on this particular matter. And on the issue of key timelines, as you respond to this one, National Treasury, just indicate especially from Parliament side, when are they expected, you know, to submit this draft budget to a National Treasury, by when? This other side, I think there is some indication as to when is the executive authority expected to submit to us as an oversight committee. And obviously, you should be able to respond to the broader question as posed by Honorable Masondo. But specifically, I want you to just respond to this one of the timelines as far as submission to the Treasury is concerned. When exactly is Parliament expected to submit to National Treasury? Thank you very much. Over.
So, President, I apologize profusely, really. I'm sorry to do this to you, but, you know, there was a question I wanted to raise, but then I, unfortunately, was just concentrated on this document. But pertaining to this very same discussion of National Treasury, I went back and found it, and it's specifically in our minutes that were dated the 16th of May. And it's on page 4, under the discussions, where the issue we discussed, and we said we'll find an answer or a decent reply to that issue, and it pertains to the fact of the surplus funds, where I will just quickly comment, the committee inquired about the need for an account by Parliament which holds surplus or retained funds, after which the PDO explained that Parliament was not obliged to surrender surplus funds to the National Revenue Fund, with the exception of allocations, etc. It was then suggested by us that, as a matter of clarity, that we quantify this matter in a discussion together with Parliament and National Treasury, and as my colleague Honorable Singh has alluded to, first time we'll have you here with us, so we'd like to just, you to clarify that issue on the surplus funds between yourselves and Parliament. Thanks, sir.
Thank you very much. Honorable September, are you okay, covered? For now? Okay, thanks. Over to you.
Thank you, honorable members, for the questions. I will try to answer the questions to the best of my ability. It's a lot of questions, but I will attempt. I think firstly, in terms of the question on the comments of the budget and whether we are, whether this actually happens, that we comment on the budget.
I'm sorry, Honorable Isaac.
In terms of the process that we follow and the relationship and the meetings we have with Parliament, we do propose the annual meeting before the budget process actually starts. So in National Treasury, we have the medium term expenditure committee process. So that's the reason why we had the meeting on the 17th of August. So in those meetings, we do give our technical advice on the budget and the adjustment budget. We did not have the regular annual meetings with Parliament. But we normally propose that we have an annual meeting so we can comment on the budget. In terms of the assistance provided for this specific information and the main divisions on the budget, I think we do provide that technical support to Parliament in terms of the main divisions. I think we also went through a series of meetings when Parliament had to change the budget program structure, just to give some guidelines. The current budget program structure of Parliament is not consistent with the other departments, but we did give Parliament assistance in terms of your main divisions of the vote. In the meetings, the question was asked whether we discussed the advice office and when, and if there's timelines. I think we had a series of meetings, and I think the first meeting that we actually discussed the Treasury Advice Office, and after that we also had meetings where we draw in our Office of the Accountant General. So the first meeting was in 2015, where we wanted to assist Parliament in terms of technical support. We did not have decided on the clear timelines in terms of when the advice office will be established. And I think when we had the meeting now in August 2015, I think one of the things raised by the National Treasury is that we need to have a project plan as to when they're going to publish a full E&E and when the advice office is going to be established. In terms of the budget process, the 10 months referred to in the Act and the 1 month, I think we cannot really respond to that. I think from Parliament side, in terms of the implementation of the Act, I think Parliament should respond to that question. In terms of the disclosure of the revenues and the estimates and the donor funding, I think at the time before the Act, when we did the E&E for Parliament, consistent with the other national departments, we did publish the information on the voted funds and also the donor funding. But up to a point when there was an Act that Parliament needed to implement, that information was not disclosed. In terms of the question of the relationship that currently exists between the National Treasury and Parliament, I would say that the relationship in terms of the Act, we have a consultative relationship between us and Parliament. So the meetings that we have with Parliament and the interaction by means of emails and telephone calls and official meetings is to provide the technical support to Parliament. There is no adversary relationship between us. We talk to each other. They give us opportunities to comment on the budget, and we do provide the support when the support is needed. In terms of the 17th of August, the question was raised, what was the outcome of the meeting? I think that was a very initial meeting. In that meeting, we had people from the budget office. We had a delegation from public finance and also from the technical advisory unit. It was an initial meeting, and we presented the internal budget process in the National Treasury. We presented the treasury regulations and the overall process, budget process within National Treasury. So from there, Parliament had to go and see whether they can map out a similar process to give effect to the Act. I think in terms of the key timelines of the Parliament budget process, I think we did agree that as we publish the due dates for the national departments, we will also include the due dates for Parliament. The fact that Parliament did not effectively implement certain clauses in the Act, we didn't really have the opportunity to publish those timelines. But we do interact in terms of the dates that certain information is required so that we can include the information then in the national budget process.
Is that all from your side, National Treasury?
Yeah, I hope I answered all the questions.
Did you hear that?
Yes, I heard that one. Sorry. I think there's two aspects to it. There's direct charges. In terms of the Act, any unspent direct charges must be paid back to the National Revenue Fund. And then there's a surplus funds that's out of the voted funds of Parliament. So those funds can be retained by Parliament. Now, the Act is not specific in terms of whether there should be disclosure how Parliament should actually spend the retained earnings. When you look through the Act, they talk about the money that was appropriated to the Appropriation Act. They talk about conditional and unconditional grants. And they talk about grants of donor funding, and then the revenue on the revenue sources of Parliament. But the Act is not very clear in terms of disclosure of the retained earnings. But I think it's important that category of expenditure should also be contained in the EAE of Parliament. But the Act is not specific that also need to be disclosed. But I think if we look at the spirit of the Act, to say transparency, all of those issues raised in my one slide, I think it's important that Parliament should also disclose how the retained earnings are being spent for the year. Because otherwise, if the money is there and you don't have disclosure right at the beginning of the process, then it becomes like, you're spending it when you have a shortage in any other area and it's not being approved. You don't really account for it. So I think in terms of the spirit of the Act, that category of expenditure should also be disclosed.
Honorable Singh, I saw your hand.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chairperson. I don't know if I've been enlightened or anywhere clearer in my mind as to how these things operate. So I'm just going to ask a simple question. Ma'am, you represent National Treasury. You are here as National Treasury. I just want to ask, are you satisfied as National Treasury that the way in which Parliament presents its financial statements to us complies with legal prescripts, as you are aware? If not, why not? If yes, why yes? And if there are grey areas that you think that need to be sorted out by Parliament or yourselves, what are those grey areas so they can be sorted out? Simple question.
So allow Honourable Mende to make a follow-up.
Thanks, Chair. Earlier on, you kept on emphasizing on consistency of Parliament to present their work like other departments. And unfortunately, you are the one that is in National Treasury to enlighten us with the processes. You're also referring to this special process between you and Parliament. Is there a document that us, as the oversight mechanism, we can refer to and say you are not complying to one, as it is stipulated on this particular guide. We are talking about the guidelines that you provided to them. Were they just verbal, or is there a document that is a regulation or guidelines that are on black and white, which you then measure them according to when they are doing the financials in Parliament? And I'm also going to emphasize, you are Treasury, you need to be telling us what your observations are as Treasury. It's not going to take away anything. You must be clear. Are they doing it or are they not doing it? Because for us to function as an oversight mechanism, we dependent on Auditor General, we dependent on National Treasury. If then you dilly-dally, you are going to have a problem.
Yeah, I think on the second question, she did indicate that Parliament, the accounting officer, will have to talk to that one. Obviously, she may want to come back on it to add, to elaborate, whatever. And I see the accounting officer is agreeing with me, so she'll have to come in on that one. Honorable September.
Chair, thank you very much. My one is really on the aspect of the E&E versus the Appropriation Act. Essentially, what you are indicating to us is there's a lacuna. Now, the reason why we have E&E relates more or less to Parliament's objective. Must be transparent, must inform the public why we do what we do, and all of that. Now, are you asking us that what we need to do is we need to craft new legislation or amendment so that we then deal with this deficit that is there? I think it will help because what I'm worried about leads to the point that says that currently the way things are, there's a big possibility that Parliament's expenditure can go into any direction because that is not in place. But apart from that, what do you suggest needs to be put in place by this committee that overcome that important aspect that you are pointing out to us? I think you must also answer the fact that we are dealing with something called separation of powers. You have an institution called Parliament where you cannot put equal to another department. We are not another department. We are supposed to oversee everyone. Now, of course, Parliament has created an act that now oversees Parliament also. So have you thought through how do you bring in that separation? Because, you see, that thinking went into how you allocated the budget also. You lumped us with departments, you didn't give us money for this, you didn't give sufficient there, and you then took us in the same way. I might be wrong, I trust. But because of that thinking, it then means that we must limp along like all the others, and you do not separate the fact that who we really are. So, Chair, I trust I haven't gone where I'm not supposed to, but I think the distinction has to be made because you can't. I refuse to say Parliament is another department of you. You can't just simply apply Treasury regulations in the same way. Have you thought through this thing?
Yeah. I'm going to allow at this stage the Akadun Minister to come in just to make sure that we allow for a conversation so that as the National Treasury comes in, they will also have to take on board, I think, the comments that the acting Secretary of to Parliament would have inputted on. But before she comes in, may I indicate that at this stage, the Honourable Dr. Motsenga, the co-chairperson of the committee, has to leave because of some other very pressing commitments. So please don't be surprised if you see him sneaking out. Okay, thank you very much. Over to you, Acting Secretary to Parliament.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members, for the questions. I just want to start on exactly what Honourable September was saying, that our Chapter 3 of the FNPPLA outlines exactly what members are worried about. It outlines the fact that once there's an indicative allocation from Treasury, which is the only place we get fiscal, Parliament has to make sure that we submit an APP and an OPP aligned to which are the amounts and the allocation as requested. So we do have an outlined process. It explains each program. Attached to it would be a required allocation. And then it also says that we must declare all donor funds and self-generated income, which we do, and we submit to this committee. And that is what you oversight at the committee. I think it is correct to say that what the Treasury did, recognizing the separation of powers, decided that instead of them breaking down the allocations further into programs, Parliament has to define a process of appropriating that allocation. And this is the lacuna. Indeed, you're right, Honourable Member. I want to go back to when the committee was actually a POA. What is lacking is what I raised in a meeting here, that what this committee has not done, Honourable Members, you have not decided on how you want to engage with the allocation as the indicative amount given to us from National Treasury. What used to happen under the POA, a multi-party used to have a subcommittee of the POA. In that subcommittee, we as officials would come and present how we think we need to cover certain things over and above compensation. In that deliberation, members would also say, please move this to that because the priority for this parliament is that one. That is what is lacking. Hence, we want him to force feed National Treasury to do that. And they're correct not to do that, exactly because it's a separation of powers. What they have to do is allocate us in terms of the fiscus. And the Act says the minister, in consultation with the executive authority, at that level, the discussion should be what is the status of the country's affordability, the whole national fiscus. How do we look like? You know, this is the pot of money. That deliberation has to happen ahead of time. By the time we get the indicative at least amount, there should have been an agreement of some sort to say for this term of Parliament, these are the constitutional imperatives of Parliament, therefore, this is what we need. In other countries, they call it top slicing. This is not happening here. And I'm just saying it because we've done a lot of benchmarking, we as officials, to look at what's the best methodology. In South Africa, it is that top level that is not happening properly. To say where does the executive authority engage with the Minister of Finance and maybe the head of state, but obviously not. In terms of the constitution, we leave it as the Minister of Finance and the executive authority. To say this is how the finances of the country look like. This is what can be allocated to Parliament. What are your priorities? Then that portion comes to yourself. What this committee needs, it's a subcommittee that engages in detail on how the budget will be spent on an MTF period. And that type of conversation used to happen before. That's where the lacuna is. Because it will then begin to outline the process. So in truth, Treasury doesn't want to dictate the process. Hence, they didn't. They were suggesting we do our own ENE chapter. Our own ENE chapter can only happen if we have a Treasury Advisory Office, which we do not have. And we do not have because the Act outlined the function, but Parliament didn't cost the function. We therefore don't have a revised budget baseline after the SMPPLA was introduced in 2009. So Parliament didn't sit to say, this function will cost this much. And similarly with the PBO, we established a PBO. We didn't cost it. So what we have done is, when we had a portfolio on Treasury Advice, we employed one person, only one person, and we took from the current budget that we have. So that's an unfunded function. What we've now tried to do is, one, we have said to National Treasury, work with us for the transitional period. Let's establish the function. And we're going to have meetings with them. And that's a sequel of the meetings they've been talking about, stop, start in this. But once we started last year, we've agreed that we will have to have a Treasury function. We'll have to sustain it as far as we can. However, it does need funding, because there's just no funding for it in terms of our budget as it is. In fact, our budget has been cut continuously. Obviously, the whole country is in recession. So that whole area we do deal with. And I want to say, in terms of Chapter 3 of our FMPPLA, we definitely do use the various programs. The only difference is that our program one, instead of saying administration, it says strategy and leadership, yes. And this, according to the template of National Treasury, it's executive. But the other programs are similar, but they also have their own permutations because Parliament is slightly different from what an ordinary department will be, because we are not a department. So that's the one thing I thought we should talk about. The other thing that we haven't done, which we are and we agreed, Gillian is correct to say we have meetings, but they are not structured. But we have agreed to structure those meetings so that it's not once a year. We structure them in line with the budgeting cycle of the country, as well as in line with the planning. And I do want to reassure you three, you chairperson, we submit our IYM, we submit financials on a monthly basis, we submit our quarterly financials to Treasury. And indeed, our view is that the ENE chapter has to be detailed, because if we don't have a detailed ENE chapter that's got programs and allocations of budget and how it's used, how are they going to assess that what we asked for is what we're spending on? That needs to happen. So we definitely need to have a detailed ENE chapter. If you look at the current ENE chapter that we have, only has two paragraphs or two lines. It doesn't outline the programs. And primarily because the request was we should actually make the breakdown. We should break down the allocation according to the programs and according to the budget. But I do want to through you, Chairperson, that maybe the Joint Standing Committee, the members should assist us to really reestablish that subcommittee of the discussions on the budget, because that's where there is a lacuna. Thanks, Chair.
Accounting officer, National Treasury, do you want to come back?
Yes, I thank you. Acting Secretary has addressed most of the questions, I think. Just in terms of the financial statements, I think we've got different roles, both on public finance and budget office. We don't comment on the financial statements as the role of the Auditor General, but we do interact with Parliament in terms of the expenditure on a quarterly basis, and there's early warning signs where we basically interact when we see the expenditure per quarter to say to Parliament that please look at that area and that area to avoid that there's any unauthorized and irregular expenditure. But we don't really comment on the financial statements. I think in terms of the oversight mechanism, I think it's important to note that to caution the committee that we don't extend the role of Parliament outside of the Act. I think it's very clear what the role of the National Treasury is in terms of the Act, and that's Section 17 of the Act, that
Parliament does not provide an oversight on Parliament and member refers to separation of power. National Treasury doesn't provide the oversight mechanism. There's no document that basically set out the regulations in terms of the Act. I think that is the role of Parliament, to basically break down the Act and also then formulate the regulations with regard to the Act. I think nowhere in the Act it says that the Parliament must provide the oversight mechanism. I think the role that the Act dictates in terms of the Act is in Section 17, and that's more a consultative relationship between the National Treasury and Parliament. And through our meetings that we have with Parliament, we're trying to provide that consultative relationship and provide technical support to Parliament.
Okay, I hope this will be the last round. Oh, I'm sorry?
Maybe just to add on the issue that the member raised regarding the separation of powers. I think if you read the Financial Management of Parliament and Provincial Legislatures Act, it's very clear that the role of National Treasury it's very circumscribed, in the sense that in actual fact the only role that you will find defined in the Act is the role that the Minister plays in respect of the consultation process that must take place between the Minister and the Executive Authority. And the Acting Secretary is correct when she did mention the fact that that's why National Treasury is also very reluctant to provide the ENE chapter on behalf of Parliament. Because when you look at Section 18, which deals with the internal budgeting processes for Parliament, it then enjoins Parliament to do its own appropriation process after the Appropriation Act has been passed, in terms of breaking down the allocated funds according to the various main divisions or programs. So I just wanted to add to indicate through your chat that the role of National Treasury in terms of its involvement in the budgeting process of Parliament, it's very limited and circumscribed. Even in relation to the format of the budget structure, all that 16 says is that Parliament must prescribe a format. And prescribed means it must be done in terms of Section 65. And the power to make those regulations does not even vest with the Minister. It actually vests with the Executive Authority of Parliament. And again, that again talks to emphasis in relation to the separation of powers. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I was just saying...
Finally, Chair.
Yes,
I just get a sense there's a humbug Ashley attitude here. You know, there's just protection. Nobody wants to go into the other side, which confuses us. We are the oversight here. And, you know, I think Treasury must consider whatever the Act says, in the absence of this Treasury Advice Officer, which Acting Secretary says we don't have the money for, and I think we've got to urgently request funding for that office to be established. The adjustments estimates are coming up. It's going to help us. I mean, we can't be an oversight committee if we don't have that office, number one. And if there is this, you know, you stay on your side of the fence, I stay on my side of the fence. But will it be possible for Treasury, and you don't have to answer now, to, while there is this lacuna, for you to provide somebody to assist Parliament to play the role of that Treasury Advice Officer? I mean, you can take that back. I mean, it can be a stopgap measure until such time that we establish this subcommittee, if we need a subcommittee. I mean, there are other responsibilities that the POA had that haven't been really taken over by this committee. And we need to take over everything. You know, we used to have lots of meetings as a POA. And it's easy for us to do that. It would be probably a resolution to the House or whatever, if it needs that. But our researchers must advise us in that regard. But this humbug Ashley is not helping us.
Thank you very much for that comment. I hope it's noted. Honorable September?
Chair, I'd like to make a suggestion. If you look at the Act, that they are all referring to that says, no, we can't do this, we can't do that, all of that. One of the things that the Act does say is that we can create regulations. Now, instead of waiting for something else to happen, for somebody to come from something, heaven or whatever, what we should agree is, if we have a quorum here now, that we agree in this committee that we have identified this aspect. These are all the reasons why we're having, with the fact that if we continue with the lacuna to be there, what the, you know, all the problems should be, and that we look at what are the various options that we have to address the matter, short of anyone putting anything on the table. What I see the Act does provide us for, the Act is very detailed in saying that the regulations in Section 65 ask us to do this, that, and the other. Use the regulation. Now, whether you know, need to go to the National Assembly or the National Council of Provinces, because we are a joint committee, we create something. I would suggest that they bring something. Bring a paper here, or discuss it wherever. Go to the Chief of Forum. You go to every conceivable thing. But put something on the place, because the Act does empower us. And I don't hear anyone saying how we can use that. Now, I need to be told that that section is not relevant. I don't think so. Use that section and use that section to empower ourselves. Because what we have to do is we really have to do something between now and whenever the election is going to be, we put something in place. If the legal people say they need a far more detailed thing, we all know you're not going to change the Act tomorrow. And I have a long story, you know, all of these other people want to do whatever. What do we do in the meantime? I don't think it's the committee's duty to put another coach onto the lacuna train and carry on like that. I would suggest that we do something here and now. I have been misunderstood on this aspect of the separation of powers. My question was a simple one, and that is, acknowledge the fact that who are we? And then say, have you worked around the fact that who are we? So you can go to England and you can see the kind of stuff. Now, of course, we only want to go to our colonial masters and so on, but let me stop there.
Colleagues, thank you very much. I don't think there's a need to respond. For sure, we are taking note, unless if you really feel... Okay, sure. Thanks.
Thank you. I think for us it's also important that we establish a Treasury Advice Office in Parliament. And I think that if we have the proper costing, if there's a request... and we can discuss and give technical advice opportunity, I think we're open for that. Then in terms of whether we can assist Parliament with the, while they're setting up the Treasury Advice Office, I think when we had a meeting in 2015, that's the reason why we also brought a delegation from our technical advisory office unit within the Treasury. So we wanted someone from the technical assistance unit to basically play that role, and the office still stands for Parliament to take that offer on.
Thank you very much. I think we have done justice to the presentation. We have been able to engage robustly with the issues raised in the presentations. And overall, we are agreeing that there is a need for more interaction, for more regular meeting between the National Treasury and ourselves, decide at the level of the accounting officer and other relevant offices. And that too, National Treasury should continue to provide that technical support to us, so that we are able to go through the transition and other issues that we are not as yet fully on top of. And further, that the accounting officer working together with the executive authority to be able to make sure that they come up with a process outlining how we as Parliament have to deal with the budget process as far as it concerns Parliament, and if necessary, propose even the necessary regulations that have to be in place. So basically what we are saying is the ball largely is in our court. The ball is largely in our court, and our accounting officer, executive authority, should be able to lead us accordingly. Whether we need a subcommittee or not is another matter. What we need is a proposal that must be brought here. After receiving that proposal, if we need or if we have to have a subcommittee, it will be up to us to decide on that matter. For now, we are saying we shall await a firm proposal on how we need to deal with these issues, including the process that has to be put in place. And if it means putting in place regulations for that purpose, I think we are ready for those. And that we are also saying we need the Treasury Advice Office, I think that is what it is called, to be funded, to be put in place as soon as possible. And the National Treasury, I think, is there available to assist accordingly. So if we could please make sure that these issues are followed up and others that they may not have elaborated upon. I think that is in order. With that, thank you very much. I believe we can now excuse the National Treasury. Thank you very much for coming and for the discussion. Thanks very much. Thanks. We will now move on to the next item, which is an update on the disciplinary process of the Secretary to Parliament. We had a discussion as co-chairpersons earlier on with the acting Secretary to Parliament to say that she does not have to go into details, especially that the matter is still sub judice sort of, and you don't want to jeopardize or prejudice anyone. So just some highlights in terms of timelines, in terms of where we are without those details, please. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. All I can say is that the disciplinary process has been going on, and it is estimated that by the end of October there would be some conclusion to the matter. However, as with any process, there's matters that might impact on the timelines, but that's what has been set out by the Chairperson of the DC. Thanks.
Okay. Honorable Singh?
Yeah, no. Thank you, Chair, and thanks for that. I understand you can't tell us more than that. But in the meanwhile, the former Secretary of the Parliament is being paid full salary and everything else. Is that what's happening? Because I think that was one of the questions that Honorable Senator asked. I mean, for how long are we going to go on with this? And are there particular challenges that you see that may extend the process to next year, October, something like that? Because at some point in time, there has to be some kind of decision, finality on this matter.
With respect to the conditions of the process, yes, indeed, he is unpaid. He is fully paid, still an employee of Parliament, up until there's a decision coming out of the DC. The details of whether there's risks or not is something that I'm not privy to, because this is really a matter of the executive authority, who are the employees of the Secretary to Parliament. I'm sorry, the employers. I'm sorry, Chair.
Okay, thanks, Honorable Isaac.
Yes, thank you. I'm beginning to wonder, what is this doing to the budget in terms of this liability or burden that we're having to carry? Because obviously, with due respect, you've been paid an acting allowance, acting secretary. So obviously, there hasn't been a budget between what the previous secretary is being paid in terms of the full salary and the benefits and perks, and now having to also contend with your acting allowance in terms of budgetary terms, because I will come to that after your report in terms of Parliament's budget and deficits, etc. I'll address that in that briefing of yours. But on the subject of the acting secretary to Parliament's income and acting allowances as against the full salary, what is it doing to our budget? How are we contending with this? Thank you, Chair.
Yeah. I really do not want us to go too deep into the matter. We are also putting her in a very difficult position. If we really have to ask difficult questions, we may want to arrange a meeting with executive authority, being the presiding officers, maybe at a later stage, no? So, at this stage. Yeah, so I'm just saying we need to also appreciate the situation, the position that she's in, yeah. Honorable September?
Appreciate for what you are saying, Chair. Not to go deep into all of this, but I just want to know, generally speaking, is it possible, they might not answer now, but if they can bring it to some next meeting, how many similar cases are you sitting with that are still dragging on, investigating, whatever, and the same, questions will be the impact on the institution, the functions, because I think that's really our concern. We must make sure that the institution continue, and what are the challenges with all these outstanding cases that are still there, if any?
Sure.
I think we can provide information with respect to all the HRDC issues. We can provide information. Those would be the ones below of ordinary, of other managers. We can provide that. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks, honorable members. I think what we've done with this presentation is first to say
I'm sorry, according officer, how much time do you need for the presentation?
I will go through the presentation and flag most important matters that I think the committee would like to attend to. So it can't exceed 30 minutes. It will be less than 30 minutes to allow for discussion, because members will have had the document, and then allow for questions. Even be shorter.
Yes.
Can I just say, start off by saying what we're presenting is also what was shared with the committee. We provided a submission of the detailed APP of 2019-2020, primarily because we have to do those submissions by the 31st of May the year before. So this APP and the budget were actually presented and, shall I say, ATC'd, because the, in terms of the timelines, we have to submit by the 31st of May. And I know that on the 15th of June 2018, we actually did have it tabled. Our presentation just summarizes on that slide that's in front of yourself, the process. The initial discussion with National Treasury has actually outlined some of the stipulations of the Act. So we provide the development of the APP and the budget in line with the Act, and that first section of the presentation provides members with that information in relation to the Act. On the other part of the presentation, what we are doing there is we're summarizing for you the fact that we revised our 2018 APP and 2018-19, with the executive authority, and thereafter management sat on between the 9th to the 11th of April 2018, looking at exactly the areas we needed to revise. So what we did here is being cognizant of the fact that the 6th Parliament will obviously have to revisit the APP. And it is very likely that in that very spirit, that Parliament and its leadership might actually have to reprioritize the budget itself. So this is the 1920-2021 strategy. And what we do later on, we just focus on the 2019 and the 2020 APP. So what did we do in the session of the 9th of April to the 11th of April? We identified the key drivers of the 6th Parliament. We provided a draft results framework to serve for preparing the APP for 2019-2020. And then we also reviewed immediate outcomes and indicators aligned to the policy priorities, because we know that for each term of Parliament, there is an engagement with both the National Assembly members as well as the NCOP to reiterate their priorities. Often the priorities are informed by the constitutional mandate of Parliament. So naturally, public participation will can't change. Lawmaking doesn't change. And also, what's the one? Forgotten. Oversight, of course. Oversight. Those are the pillars of the Constitution, and that's what Parliament is defined for. And then, of course, we did review the indicators in terms of the programs. We developed operational plans that we implemented on an annual basis, and that's informed by annual performance plan. And, of course, we also developed the resource and budget requirements aligned to the requirements for the implementation of the plans. At the end of that, we are saying these things are subject to change with the establishment of the 6th Parliament. However, we are aware that we need to do some framework and some preparation of some sort as official. What we provide on the next part of the presentation is just to highlight some of the outcomes, and here we say, having developed capacity, what we're hoping to do is capacity building to improve the programs for members, to also improve timelines and quality of advisory and information services. This is largely what we provide to Parliament and to members, and also to ensure that facilities and creation of an enabling environment. We improve on that. The usage of facilities, as we have, you will see that when we made presentations, we actually spoke about seamless integration of services to members. And finally, to increase and enhance legislative sector cooperation, which is quite important for the sector itself. The next part of the presentation is largely what we were talking about. I just want to highlight two areas here. The first one is, if you look at the slide itself, it shows that in 2019 to 2020, the already appropriated budget is 1.8 million or billion, and of course the direct charges are 633 million. You will see, honorable members, that this is what we're talking about with respect to what has been appropriated by Treasury. And in that, it addresses the question that was raised. We do include donor funding, which is 40 million, that comes from the EU. We include self-generated income, often comes from the sales of food in our various in our various restaurants. And then, of course, we include interest, and then, of course, other revenues that would be when some departments have actually paid for certain space that we give them, like using our restaurants. And then what we also show you is, over 3 years, the increases and the decreases of allocations from Treasury. You'll see that we also say that there has been an increase of 1.4%, and then here there's an increase here of 10%, and then the next year, that's an MTF, the increase is very insignificant. It's actually CPI linked. We also will show you the decline in terms of the budgetary cuts over the period of MTF. The whole presentation, we're just going to talk on the allocation for this, for the current, this 2019-2020, and we'll provide you with a breakdown for the program. The next part of our presentation, we've always shared this with committee members. It's not new information. What we're trying to share with yourselves is, over time, there's been a consistent budget cut from National Treasury, primarily because of the constraints in the fiscus. Ultimately, in that MTF, there's a reduction of 375.4 million from our baseline budget. The bulk of that, you will see, honorable members, it comes from compensation. If you look at 18-19, 141 million there comes from compensation of employees. And then, of course, at 19-20, there's 22.3 million, which is, again, a cut from compensation of employees, and here it is employees strictly. And that has direct impact on the type of service that we provide to members going forward, and we'll show you later on what that means. What we've tried to do here, and I do know that it might be small in terms of the size of the font, but what we've tried to do here, we used to present to you the program, then we'll present a separate slide on the purpose of the program, and then we'll present the budget. What we've tried to do is we've tried to improve our presentation by integrating all the information on one slide. And I'd like members to just focus on the column of 2019-2020, because the lower part shows you the breakdown. And this, I must say, is the request. This is what we requested. And I look at just the totals. 2019-2020, we requested 3 billion. And the part below that slide, the bottom part, shows you what we have been allocated, as in current letter received from Treasury. We requested 3 billion. We have been given 2.5. The indicative is what comes from Treasury. This is what we asked for. So the difference itself, if you look at the budget deficit, it's sitting at 477 million. What are we saying? Here we're saying, how will this impact on the strategy of Parliament? It will impact because we'll not be able to fill all the critical positions as we were sharing that. We keep on making sure that when somebody loses a position or when a position is vacant, we ask the managers to say, how critical is this position? And we fill it on the basis of the fact that it is critical. And then we are also saying that the space utilization in terms of expansion as well as renovation of spaces for members to use is going to be impacted on negatively. We are also indicating that there will be 2 states of nation address, and we have actually submitted in the adjustments that we need budget for that, as well as the inauguration, as well as the establishment of the 6th Parliament. We also indicate that it will impact on institutional projects. As it stands, the National Council of Provinces does not have committees that are able to have almost like modern technology, if one were to put it that way. Those committees need to be renovated, and we have actually indicated a budget of renovating those committee rooms. Committee rooms are old, the wiring is old, and we have costed to that budget, which we don't have. We know that committee oversight has increased over, I think in the past year it's increased a lot, and there are certain activities of members that we would not have envisaged. The CRC, for instance, the increased oversight committee work, we will not be able to fulfill that function, primarily because when committees go out, we have to send researchers, we have to send to make sure that translators are there, interpreters are there. We have also to make sure that ahead of time, there must be reconnaissance, clearing, safe, making the space or the venue safe. So we send officials ahead of time. We also send them to secure the places during their engagement. Legal costs, there's been an increase in litigation in Parliament, and we say if we don't get the $3 billion, we definitely are going to be compromised. I've spoken about the sixth Parliament. But I also want to bring to the attention of members that that section shows that our budget is skewed towards the core business of Parliament, and we've been asked many a times by a committee as to how do we know that you are doing what we expect you to do. First and foremost, the 21% is all on associated services, that is for members, and then 25% of our total budget goes for core business, and that is the work of Parliament, committee work, research, legal service, content advice. Then, of course, we've got the direct charges, that the budget of which, if not all spent, is returned to the national fund. And the support services is 15% of the budget, and that is your ICTs, HR, communications. 6% is the leadership administration, that is budget that goes to the offices of the two houses, and then 4% to strategic and leadership governance. So the breakdown of the budget, and this is what was being discussed earlier on. And this is the area that we think if we do exactly what members have agreed we should do, a proposal on how is our budget appropriated. This is an area where we do think members have to input in and reprioritize, particularly when there's a shortage of budget as requested. The next part of the presentation just provides members with what I've already said, that in terms of compensation, we have a total shortfall of $252 million. Where does that come from? It's the additional amount of 44.4, and in addition to that, if you add it up with $241 million, it provides us with the total deficit as indicated. What does this mean? It means that we will not be able to fulfill the request of strengthening the PDO and the discussion that we've just had over the Treasury Office. So all of those are definitely going to impact on the work of Parliament if we have such a deficient budget. And that slide only shows you that continuously what we're doing here, we take budget from the operations, goods and services, and we always try and compensate for compensation or put it in compensation so that we actually ensure that Parliament fulfills its objective. The next part of the presentation takes you to the programs. It is the same methodology. We have indicated what that program does, and here's it on the right side of the slide. The strategic objectives of this program are, one, to improve independent and objective professional analysis and advice on matters related to the budget, that's the PDO largely. Improve the provision of objective research. This is where our researchers, content advisors, committee support have to emanate from, and of course the ISDs. What the budget shows you just on this level, 2019, shows you again, this program requested $130 million. According to the indicative figures from Parliament, from Treasury, it's going to be reduced. It's actually $130 million. Let me just correct this. $130 million, this is the total that we're going to receive. And the breakdown thereof goes to $130 million. And under the indicative amount, we are now having $78 million. So this is a reduction from what was asked. That was the request. This is the indicative allocation. And it is the indicative allocation because this is what we have received from Treasury. And the next column shows the deficit of $52 million. So in this program, you will see that there will be certain things that might not be done and all will be compromised if indeed this is not improved over time and when the final budget is given in the next year. Shall I also talk? Let me go to program two, which is administration. Similarly, what we do here is the same thing. We try to outline to members what is the purpose of this program, and I will not read it. It's there for members to look at. And of course, we indicate to yourselves that in this program, the deficit is at 129 million. We requested 250, indicative in terms of the allocation, it's 121, and this is what will be given in terms of the letter that we've received from Treasury. And what we then do is we provide members the impact that that deficit will have on the work of Parliament. Filling of positions, I've spoken about the revamping of the various committee rooms in the NCOP that will be impacted on, and the extent to which we can actually make sure that members have got the facilities they need to have, particularly in the new term of Parliament, will be impacted on. Program 3, the next part of the presentation, again, it shows exactly what the deficit is, and I will look at just the bottom part because I've been repeating on the column of 2019-2020. And maybe I should also say, how do we get to this amount? We get to this amount by asking our various division managers sitting in this meeting to say, for you to succeed in implementing the work of Parliament, what do you need? And there's a whole process of zero budgeting, which colleagues engage in, and they provide those requests to us. And of course, this is how we explain that. In this particular program 3, which is core business, you'll see that I need to point it out to members that core business support, I think it's there. I'm sorry, the black on blue doesn't look nice on the eye. It doesn't feel good. But I do want to flag through you, Chairperson, that you will see that core business, this is where the crux of the work of Parliament depends on. It is exactly the research, the content advisors, and it is driven largely by compensation because we depend on human beings to produce work in support of members. And then, of course, the deficit in this program is sitting at 79 million. And we do indicate that largely it's compensation driven, therefore we will not be able to fill. There will never be a time, unless if things change in our country in terms of the country's economy, where we possibly will not afford one committee to have an individual legal advisor, an individual researcher, an individual content advisor, primarily because of the way in which things are going. Program 4, it's, as I've said, it's largely the human resources, the member support, ISS, which is the facilities, and also communications. And I think members can see that, there you are, have you moved? Okay, program 4. This is the percentage to from budget to this program is much less than that of the core business. And on the other side, we've actually indicated to yourselves that this is where we do a lot of surveys that assess member satisfaction on the services that we provide, awareness of people on the work of Parliament, and also ensuring that communication reaches people that needs to be reached in the country. This whole program had asked for 483 million, and then of course the deficit is 140 million. And indicatively, we could only allocate 342.7 million. And in here, we explain how it will impact on the work of Parliament. Truth be told, this whole revisit and primary first visit of various sides of the oversight committee started, I think, 2 years ago. In the past, we used not to send officials to venues of committee members before they go out. So we have introduced that, and it does impact on our budget. And then, of course, it will also impact on the replacement of computer equipment. And lastly, what we want to do this year and going forward, we want to review the whole ICT system of Parliament so that it's better integrated. And that's the ERP that we want to introduce. It will impact on that negatively. The a few more slides that I'll go to. On the associated services, that is at the bottom there, the first one is we said here compensation of employees. This is largely the medical aid amount that's sitting in our budget. And these are some of the things that distort our budget-based Parliament. We carry the medical aid, and I think members of this committee have said many a time, and including former members as well as former members of the provincial legislature. And we carry that budget, and it does distort our baseline as if we have lots of money. There's definitely going to be a deficit there of $75 million, and that will be around the goods and services when there's need for more tickets and entitlements of members. And the last slide on this presentation is, I think it is the last one, it is the direct charges. Honourable members, we've spoken about this, and I think I want to talk a little bit on why there's a difference here of 633 and then it goes down to 599 million. What we have done here, Chala, as the National Treasurer, they've factored in the loss of office gratuity in anticipation of elections. Then, of course, it drops down here. And when it drops down, like we reported to yourselves, in 1819, Treasury reduced this amount by about 93 million, if I'm not wrong. And they took that 93 million, they put it into compensation. That didn't mean they revised our baseline. They just moved that money. This is the one that when we don't spend, it goes back to the national fund. So what then has happened now, they've taken that relatively the same amount, put it back on that line item to cover for loss of office gratuity. And then, of course, the next year there's nothing. It then drops. It drops again. We then have to say to them, okay, go take it back to compensation. And so it's the same amount of money being played around for the MTF. So there's no revision of baseline, which is has a negative effect on the work of Parliament. And I must say to honourable members that we have consistently and continuously asked and for a revision of our budget baseline. And in the past, Treasury said, look, you have retained funds. Now, the retained funds have depleted completely because we used to take the retained funds. That's why even currently, I think political parties are really feeling the pinch because there haven't been any increase on that. Because in the past, we'll just take what we have in retained funds and then complement. However, now that has depleted. We've submitted again, the legislative authority has signed a request for adjustment, and in it we've included the PBO, we've included the Treasury advice, we've also included the 28 million that is a deficit currently of the political party allowances, which has never been increased over a period of time. And maybe what it highlights is possibly the intensified engagement at technical level, we've been interacting with Treasury, but possibly at a political level, there's need for interaction between this committee in support of the executive authority, because I know it's a resolution that this committee took to say you'll work with the executive authority and look at the need of engaging Treasury just to correct the baseline of Parliament budget. What has happened now? What is included in your presentation, but not, I'm not going to talk to it, is the notes. We have given you the detail of the budget notes as requested, and they are in your presentation, and they do outline the various percentages and everything else that looks like a variance in the budget itself. I see that the PowerPoint presentation has gone off. The project has gone off, but I'm right at the end of the presentation, and as far as the request in terms of the agenda
is requested.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm right at the end. Thanks very much.
Oh, are you done?
I'm done.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, yes, Chair. I was saying the latter part of the additions is the notes.
Okay.
Yes. And I know that what I said earlier on is we did a summary of the APP as submitted earlier.
Yes.
So those are just the highlights we did in the first four slides.
Okay.
So what we've done is we've integrated the budget and the various programs and the objectives of each program.
Okay.
Thanks, Chairperson.
That's fine. Thank you very much, Accounting Officer, for that presentation. I guess there are no additions from your colleagues.
They'll answer the questions.
Okay.
Here to answer the difficult questions.
No, thanks very much. I see Honourable Singh wants to kickstart the discussion.
Yeah, Chair, I just didn't know how we want to proceed with this. Are we going to ask them questions? so that the next time they come around, is that how? Can I just ask my first question? These critical vacant posts, can we have a list of them? You say there are critical vacant posts to support committees that will not be filled because you don't have the money. What are those critical posts? Because you see, there's a synopsis here of where the shortfalls are. But I want to know to what extent has a detailed motivation been made by the executive, and when do they start making that? Has there been any interaction between executive and treasury? We said a long time ago that if we are convinced as a committee on these expenditure items and the need for them, we will work with our authority to go to treasury and say this is what we want. When is that process? Is there a timeline for that process? And then in terms of the adjustment appropriations, has there been any requests from Parliament to National Treasury, please adjust these amounts like we were told by the lady, but bring this up now for the Treasury Advice Office, and they will consider it. So have there been any other items where there's such requests, or have we missed the deadline? So those are just the general questions. I don't want to go into specifics, Chairperson. We're tired, and we're going to go back to the House as well.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair. Can you assist me with the following? The aspect of Parliament moving from Cape Town, where is that in the proposal that you have given? I agree. Although you're talking 2019-20, but in anticipation of the reality that the fifth parliament is coming to an end, the elements as it relates to the last part of the fifth parliament that requires financing of a range of different things. Where does that feature in what you are presenting? And I want to suggest also, Chair, that everything that is sort of after the elections part of the budget, I think it would be good to have a conversation also with a committee that is preparing the sixth parliament to look at, you know, what emerges out of those meetings as things that needs to be taken care of. Chair, I worry that we take to the next budget our baggage of the fifth parliament. And the baggage as it relates to something that is not in this presentation that speaks to the fact of what has been the difficulties of upholding our constitutional obligations as Parliament as it relates to the financing aspect. And then how have you then addressed it in this budget? And when I say baggage, I think it will be wrong to go to the sixth parliament to say we can't fill this post because there's no money. It directly impedes on our constitutional obligation. You wouldn't want me to go into all of those problems that we are all individually sitting with in the committee. But I can tell you're not going to have staff left after everything else that we have been going on, that we've been doing in the fifth Parliament, and the productivity and the qualitative nature of the work that we expect and have expected and hasn't happened, not because everyone is lazy, but because of the nature of work. So I really want to appeal. We have to put forward a case in here that says here is our constitutional obligations, and we therefore say that we require the following things. And then the categories that go together with that. Political parties. You have to go to the adjustment budget to see if you get more money. But surely, have you been able to allow political parties to function in a manner that they should? Because your fifth parliament was not able to compensate the political parties in a manner that they were supposed to. And then any other aspect would be how you deal with your administration, which is sort of all of you. And it will be wrong if the administration award themselves handsomely, but the other parts are neglected. You can't neglect administration. You can't neglect political parties because of administration. You can't neglect the engine of parliament, which are being neglected terribly at the moment, versus that one. So, Chair, I'd like to know, have you been able to put together this thing for the National Assembly and for the NCLP that says, this is the baggage of the fifth parliament, and therefore here is our case to be made for the sixth parliament that says, every committee, it's not entitled, should have every meeting room of members should have, and so on and so on, and this is really what it means. I don't think we have to be shy to say that we want to uphold the Constitution, Chair, would be my argument. So, yeah, I don't want us to carry on in the budget just to say that this is what we did. Let's just try and see if we can smooth do the next one. And no, I think we need new things. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable September. Honorable Mendon.
Thank you, Chair. All right. My concerns, firstly, are also around the issue of critical positions and where you are indicating a deficit. It's actually a very large deficit on administration and core business. But if we have to go back to the presentations that we did for, when was it May, there was an indication of a smooth running in those offices of 100%, 100%, 100%, 100%. Now, I'm failing to make a correlation between that 100% and the new needs. Why do we need more people when we can perform at 100%? Why do we need more budget when we can perform at 100%? Same applies to all the content advisors. They were rated at 100%. Statements, everything was rated at 100%. So how do we then need more money to finance that function, which is running very smoothly, according to the presentation you gave us? And then number two, the PBO. My understanding and the core function of the PBO is supposed to be an independent advisory office. Was there at any given point that Parliament had sought to put it as an independent office away from Parliament as its baby? And make it a separate, I'll call it an entity, or a separate component of Parliament than it being directly under Parliament and being financed in Parliament, because it should be providing an independent advice to the money bills and what's happening in Parliament, which I think it also goes into different departments and how should it be, how should financials be analyzed in terms of what they seek to achieve on the APPs and the annual budget document. So is there perhaps a move that they will ever be separate from you? Because I'm afraid of the saying that the hand that feeds you owns you. Then they might end up being the baby of Parliament and never find a fault within Parliament. And that then makes them not so independent? And lastly, you are indicating that you will have a deficit on legal costs and SONA. I don't think we'll have a deficit for SONA because all those luxuries of the SONA can be just cut. They are not really necessary. We can have a proper SONA without spending so many millions on the SONA. We can cut a lot of it out of the SONA. And then number two, the legal cost. Most of the time, legal costs are the result of individuals' actions. And in most cases, Chair, even here in Parliament, ever since we started this committee, I remember there was one incident where a member had issued a member of Parliament a tender. And on that case, no one was ever held accountable. We never really got a proper feedback on that. But my point is, it's always individuals in Parliament that causes us the loss of litigations and everything. And we cannot really direct that to the budget of Parliament other than individuals should start owning up to their misbehavior and actions in Parliament. And if ever we have to take their salaries and everything, then we have to do that, except for issues that really require Parliament to take charge and pay for those legal costs. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Mende. Honourable Isaac, you want to come in?
Chairperson, I full well realize that we're running out of time, and it has been alluded to, but you know, I'm also anxious about the deficits. For example, you know, 2019-2020, you know, 430 million deficit, 2021 financial year 369, and then again 393. So the question is why does Parliament budget for deficit? You know, why don't we budget for what we exactly need? Why must we budget for deficits? Because where will that funding come from? Because the issue is that I see that performance indicators 1 and 2, I think, has been reduced. Now, that is also a matter of concern. And I just wanted to highlight those two issues. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much, Honorable Isaac. From my side, I just want some clarity. I think one of your slides, the first ones, you alluded to the outcomes that you want to achieve in this next financial year. Number three thereof reads, improved use of facilities and creation of enabling environment. Yeah. I just want clarity on the usage of the word use, improved use, because I thought the issue here should be about improved facilities and creation of blah, blah, blah. So when you say improved use of facilities, does it mean at some point you are going to have to measure the use of these facilities by members, and if they don't, are you going to take responsibility? Yeah, I just want some clarity. And also, I think I'm covered on the issue of legal costs by Honorable Mende. And yeah, the implications of the budget reduction on taking Parliament to the people. Just elaborate on that, on the implications thereof. But also, under administration, one of the objectives there is about improved coordination, cooperation, and IGR of Parliament with provincial legislature. Being a member of Parliament in the SOP, we do from time to time participate in programs that take us to provinces where we have to interact with communities and what have you. But one of the challenges that we come across now and then is poor participation by provincial legislature, which in itself means that Parliament then ends up having to spend more on some activities that normally provincial legislatures would have been in a better position to do. So I just want to check as to whether are there ways and means of ensuring that we save costs by ensuring that provincial legislatures actually do their bit in terms of these programs that NCOP ends up having to do in their own provinces. NCOP is a house representing provincial legislatures, and it's of utmost importance that there has to be that cooperation, that partnership between NCOP and provincial legislatures. But if they're not coming to the party, Parliament through NCOP ends up being overstretched. So I'm just saying, as part of cost-cutting measures, we need to find a way of ensuring that our provincial legislatures actually come to the party much better, in better ways than they have so far done. The issue of support services, where you are alluding to protection services during oversight, ne? Don't we use police here? Why do we have to incur costs? I know when we go out now and then, we are accompanied by the police ourselves as members of the NCOP. The issue of these protection services, exactly what do you mean? Can we do something about it? I think from my side, those are the points that I wanted to raise. Thank you very much. Over to you, accounting officer, and your colleagues.
Thank you very much, Acha, and thank you, members, for the questions. My colleagues will also come in on some of the questions. Honorable Singh, indeed, I think we are worried about the budget deficit. And your question is, when are we going to engage National Treasury? We have agreed with the CFO that we're going to be writing a letter again, and that at a technical level we engage. However, the executive authority will have to engage with the minister on the issue of the budget for Parliament. Submission of adjustments, we've done that. Every year we submit, and every year we get a decline. We've received a letter as we speak now, and CFO can just indicate what is contained in that letter. And indeed, what we will do from this meeting, which we have done before, write to the minister that is signed by the executive authority, asking for a meeting before. And we were thinking it to be before October, but we know that the speaker is traveling the first part of September because she's leading a few delegations. However, what we agreed in a meeting with the CFO is that whoever is the acting speaker and the chairperson will actually have to have a meeting. And that was a resolution of this committee, that either the two co-chairs join in that meeting, and we're going to request that. In it, we will provide you, even now, maybe tomorrow, we'll provide you with what we submitted, and we'll give you the response that came from Treasury. because we think, as technocrats, we've done what we could. There's a point where there's got to be a catalyst, and that catalyst will have to be political leaders and not ourselves. And then with respect to critical positions, yes, what we will do, I think last time when we presented to yourselves, we said we have about 122 positions that we are filling over time. And we're saying that because we had that injection of $95 million, as I was explaining, that was moved from the direct charges to compensation. We've been able to fill in positions. Unfortunately, part of our challenge is there's turnover, there's resignations, some people get promoted, but we're quite aware that some members have called me to say there are certain committees that have never had either a researcher or a content advisor. And there that's where the division manager does actually reprioritize and make sure that those committees get support. I do know for a fact that some of the committee researchers and legal advisors actually work across certain committees, across committees. We are also in the process of having learned from other institutions that maybe Parliament, we need to think differently, and we have actually gotten into re-engineering process. Now, instead of having dedicated researchers for NCOP and dedicated researchers for NA, why not pull together a pool of researchers who serve Parliament? You know, so there's a few things we're thinking through, because some parliaments do that. They have senior researchers, they've got junior researchers. It's a team, and it's undefined. So if you're a researcher, you'll have to research and support both houses. So we're thinking about doing that. And then there are other areas where we're thinking there definitely has to be dedicated resources, like your support to the chairperson of committees, or even support to committees like committee secretaries and committee assistants. Those are non-negotiable. What am I saying? I'm saying that we presented to yourself the 122 that we're going to fill. What we will provide with the committee chair would be just progress on how far have we gone with filling those positions. Sometimes the turnaround is precisely that Cape Town people don't take up positions easily, and we find that we make offers and it's delayed. Some don't take up the positions and they really feel relocating to Cape Town is a big challenge. I must proceed.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Chair. I want to be clear so that I answer. Are you asking that what is the status of relocating Parliament, or are you asking whether in our relocation of Parliament have we factored the budget? Because if you clarify, then I'll be able to answer.
Honourable September, do you want to come in and clarify the question?
It's really a combination, in fact, of both that you have asked. I'll answer
the first one. What we've done is we have commissioned a study. When the Cabinet presented the fact that it is costly to have, at the time, that is at the State of the Nation address last year, I think in that, the former president said Parliament has to also provide its own input on the cost effectiveness of being in Cape Town. We have commissioned a study, a socio-economic impact study, and in it is exactly what will happen if we relocate, because it's just not moving Parliament. It is moving at least 494 members of Parliament. It is moving 1,300 support staff and their families. It is finding spaces and places and ensuring that that location is closer to their offices, and it's quite big. What is said, because we don't have veracity of data, we don't have verifiable data, we've appointed a company through our SM processes called Pamoji, who have now started doing a study which will also include the having to inquire from members themselves as a stakeholder, because there's a whole process, and include the impact that will have in Cape Town. And it doesn't matter where the Parliament is, the features of Parliament and the operations of Parliament are set in a particular way. So it doesn't matter where it is. So we have that, and in 6 months' time, I do know that they have been installed, and in 6 months' time, meaning that by December or January, we'll receive a report that we'll share with the committee and, of course, the executive authority, just to show whether there are other ways of, because when the executive presented their argument, it was about the cost effectiveness of running up and down. And it might well be that Parliament, even if it stays here, let me say, honourable members, we do need to have an efficient and enabling environment. We need to have committee rooms that are functional. We need to have recorders for archiving the work of Parliament. We need to have electronic usage. So even those things we need to improve anyway, sitting where we're sitting, and expand the space here. So that study is going to look at a whole range of things, and it's got the terms of reference. And I think we were asked about it the other time. I'm not sure. I'll check with my colleagues if we did submit some to the committee. And we can share the terms of reference with yourself. But we hope that in 6 months' time we'll have that detail. Because we actually do need a habitable space for members of Parliament. So the notion of whether it will relocate or not will be dependent on what members say in line with how much it will cost, and the, there will be projections. In 2004, when the Mpatswa consultants were employed, they were estimating $2.6 billion. That was 2004. And they even had a model of how it would look like. And that was about expanding where we are at now. So the argument is that even if you relocate to anywhere else, you need accommodation. Members of Parliament will always travel. It doesn't matter where the Parliament is located. But we'll provide the study outcomes to yourselves and, of course, to the executive authority. With respect to, yes, I think Honourable Secretary is correct. We have put together a team on the legacy, and we're doing exactly that. We're doing an analysis of the lessons learned in the fifth Parliament and what are the things that have to be looked at and circumvent perpetuation, as you refer to it, given the baggage of fifth Parliament into the sixth Parliament. And in our report, we're going to present to yourselves things that we think are going to be important to improve going forward. So in it, there's the administration part of the legacy report, and there's also political part. So there definitely is a whole team that is working on the legacy report, which will be processed by this by the committee. And, of course, there will be structures where we will have to present under the guidance of the executive authority. I've talked about legacy report. There's a honourable mention. You're asking about the 100%. Truth be told, there are staff members that are stretched. That is why, indeed, we are looking at these positions as critical. We need those positions. And had we not been, had the budget of compensation not been cut four years ago, our anticipation and our plan was for each committee to have a researcher. Primarily because it will support. Because if you don't have that, you compromise the quality, and then you stretch staff, and staff just gets exhausted. Example, in this year, we saw an increase in mini plenaries, and that needed translation interpretation at any point in time. And you'll see that's one of the indicators we couldn't meet. And then there was a question of a sign language interpreter. We only have, I think, two or three, and we couldn't stretch that. So there's definitely a deficiency. And you will see where there's a deficiency and impact in terms of staff, that we didn't meet the target, and that's on translation, and where there's also an override of how it's going too long, we don't meet the target turnaround time, because here we're only planning measuring turnaround time. I think if we were to measure even quality, the discussion would be different, because members would say, you're chasing after time, but the quality we're getting is not good. So what am I saying? That I'm saying colleagues are stretched, and I can also give an example. In terms of the paying back, refunding members' expenditure, members will see that we had put ourselves 2.5 days turnaround time. There's certain times where we couldn't. Whereas that area has got, I think, less than 10 people. And there's a time where some were ill, some had to do exams, and we missed out the target. So definitely there's some indication that tells that because of the budget cuts, and I must hasten to say that, honorable members, when Treasury cut our budget, they didn't communicate with us. They just looked at the fact that we are ballooned staff and took off the budget. And they do accept that they cut about, was it 112, yeah, in total. But the first day was about 108 million. A CFO can say better. They didn't negotiate with us. They just looked at us. They said, it's a balloons. We have like 1,400, and we had about 1,200 full active positions. And then they took off the ones that we're going to fill in. You know, and that is why we have the stress, and we know that in household, for instance, catering, we have a shortage of catering, primarily because, houses run this late, committees sit late, members who want refreshments, we can't even, we're stretching the very people we have, and there's a lot of ailments in that area. So it's not only researchers, it cuts across everything else, because we were not consulted when the budget of compensation was cut. So I'm saying we're stretching, we meet the targets, and we try our best to meet those that we can. But I think we've done well. I think the committee members must really appreciate themselves in your guidance that we now got the fourth clean audit in 4 years succession. It's a tall order, and that's how the officials and administration of parliament works, and they work very hard. The PBO, indeed the Act does say the work of the PBO is independent. The current Act, I'm not talking about the one that's been amended, and I think it was passed in the NA, it's now with the NCOP. The Act that's in existence talks about the independency of PBO. However, the administration was still under the CEO of Parliament, but the amendment has changed that relationship. I think the challenge is, because there's no set budget for PBO, it gets the transfer from our budget. We take and allocate. It comes through us because there's no vote, independent vote, for the PBO. And that's the state of now. How it will change, it will depend entirely on how the new amendment to the Act talks to the administration. I've read a little bit. It assumes, actually, I think it explicitly says the director will be responsible for the employment, the HR, ICTs of the PBO, meaning that the PBO will be completely independent. Currently, they use our human resources policy, our ICT policies, all administration policies come from Parliament. So in terms of the amendment, in that area, it's sort of separated completely. We'll see how it pans out. I'm sure we'll get guidance from the joint committees that are almost like the advisory council of the PBO. I want to give some of the questions to the CFO. CFO, talk about the TPT implications of decreased budget and protection service. Okay, fine, let me go on. He'll add whatever I leave out. With respect to the point Chairperson raised, facilities, I just want to give an example. We introduced an enabling tool, app, my parliament. We trained a number of officials in committees. However, working with Honorable Frolic's committee, would like a big uptake from members. And that's a facility convenient for members. The uptake is not as we would have expected, because we've also invested money in establishing that. And we really think if we use that, we'll have an integrated service, platform convenient for members, to access information. It will also help us to push in information so that all documents you receive, live and not live, whether digitized, whether copied, but that app is very powerful. And we think going into the sixth parliament, we're going to infuse it into induction and do induction almost every month or every quarter to support members and make sure that they uptake. And that's the part of facilities. The environment is the fact that what I was saying, over time, there's a time where we were paying hotels for meeting rooms. Hence, we need to really improve that by creating facilities on the precinct. Part of what we're doing, we are asking Public Works through Ms. Zungu, who's the head of the facilities, she's sitting right in the back, she's working very closely with Public Works to make sure that there's Ms. Zungu, the one who would know her. She must raise her hand. She's really working hard at making sure that Public Works provides us the space in Max Building, because they have rented out space to other departments, yet we're short of space. So she's succeeded to make sure that the sixth floor is vacated. I think it was the family court. And then we fight to the staffs who have an office here that is hardly ever used. So all that space, that's an environment we are not using. And when we say improving that, we want them to vacate to Chairperson.
Sure.
And the TPT, taking Parliament to the people, the reason there has been a decrease, but it's not really, it's going to be problematic at some stage. I agree with you. We need to work with the legislative sector. But we can only win that by pre-planning with them, so that we are aligned where we can reduce and where we can have shared services and support to members. And the secretaries of the legislatures, we have an association, we have spoken about it. Where it's unfair is when we just bring it on them and then call them tomorrow to say, my committee is coming down, can you support it? It's uncertain. So we will define the planning thereof. Then the other reason why TPT has actually reduced also what Advocate Pindera has done with the team is they've decided instead of using these massive marquees, where the venue, where there are buildings to be used, they are beginning to use those buildings and setting up a massive marquee which is costing about 10 million and so on. But the NCOP has made it clear that there's also local government which we should factor into the budget. Finally, on protection services. Whilst we agree that the police, that there's a cost to it. So they won't offer the services for free. They bill us. And then second to that, we have the resort ourselves here, wherein we actually send out colleagues. But this area will also be improved if we improve the working relationships with our legislative sector, wherein we can actually, even communications, for instance, instead of sending three, four people from Parliament, we can send one, but work with the sector, and we understand that chapter.
Absolutely.
I think I've covered a lot of the questions raised. Thanks.
I don't see any of your colleagues raising a hand to add, which means you have covered everything according to them. Let me check with my colleagues. Are there follow-up questions or new questions? Say that again? Or you want to please comment on that one?
Ms. Beck is here. She can speak on that because what's interesting, the question you're asking, we presented to the audit committee. They asked us about the litigation report and where do the costs come from. I'll ask Ms. Beck to talk to it.
Sure.
Thank you, Ms. Chawla. Thank you, Chairperson. Evening, members and colleagues. It's not an easy question to answer. In the ideal world, you would not want people to sue you. And if I look at our litigation report, there's a number of instances where Parliament is cited as a party, but we're not really a party to a matter. We've got matters where you have divorce proceedings, where there's provisions in a particular piece of legislation that impacts negatively on one party to the proceedings and where they want this provision to be changed. And it's a request to the Department of Justice, but Parliament is cited because we're the lawmaking body. That is just one example. We've got other pieces of litigation that involves political parties taking matters that's in front of the House or in committees to court. And that forms the bulk of the litigation that we are actually involved with. On the issue of cost, we use the state attorney as a conduit. They would do the assist us with the procurement of counsel, etc. And we would normally reimburse the state attorney for the cost incurred. There are matters where Parliament has successfully defended matters or the applications where costs were awarded in favour of Parliament, where the state attorney is charged with recovering that cost for Parliament. And we have at least four of those matters where the cost needs to be recovered. But we depended on the state attorney as our representative to draw up a bill of cost to sit it down for taxation and then to recover those costs from individuals. We have followed up with the state attorneys to give us a regular update in terms of where we are in terms of recovering those costs. We haven't seen the rounds and things, but there is a process that the state attorney has to follow to recover that money. Thank you.
Honourable September?
My question was misunderstood, Chair, because you took the first part, Acting Secretary, of what I made the example of, the fact that there's a P&O committee dealing with the sixth parliament. But my question was, learning from the baggage of the fifth parliament, how have you taken this into the budget that you are proposing for the sixth parliament and build a case as to why this is necessary, that we need to look at the areas that I've said earlier on, notwithstanding what you're saying, Treasury says no and so on, but, and I was making the case about our constitutional obligation.
Sure.
I think we must share with the committee the submission to Treasury. We have done that, and we have actually explained that the mandate of Parliament is, if Parliament is not sufficiently funded, it's going to compromise the work of oversight, lawmaking, and we do actually indicate, yes, we do have that. That's the same matter that we will infuse into the sixth Parliament as part of the report. But the budget has to change. It has to change. We were just doing calculations with the CFO, and I'm sure him and Joe Guna can actually indicate that over years, the budget baseline has not increased. The Parliament budget baseline has not increased. It is just all the amounts have been on CPI. That's all. So that's the debate we've been having with our technocrats. And I think to start with that interaction between the executive authority with chairpersons of this committee and the Minister of Treasury would be useful. And I just want to say one very quick thing, Chairperson, if you allow me. What we also did, which was correct, we invited our Treasury colleagues with the division managers, and we actually explained to them how we work. Because it was very clear that there was no knowledge and no understanding of how Parliament operates, and they began to appreciate that. Thanks. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, it looks like we have done justice to the presentation, to the issues raised, which I believe have been noted, and as we move forward, we expect the accounting officer and the executive authority to refine their submissions accordingly. Amongst other things, we are agreeing that we need to make sure that we create that platform where the committee will be able to interact with the executive authority so that we are taken on board on the submission or submissions that we have made to National Treasury, so that where possible we can bring our weight to bear in those discussions, and hopefully something positive will come out of it. We have also highlighted the need for us to be furnished with necessary information regarding critical positions that have to be filled, so that that also can be taken up if we find it very, very necessary. Going forward, we also expect to be furnished with the socio-economic impact study once it is ready on moving Parliament, or on the need to move Parliament from here to Gauteng. And in areas where there has been consistent performance, the committee is raising the need for yourselves to reconsider the issue of additional home bodies. I think that is the point that Honorable Mende raised. We are not saying don't. We are flagging it to say please look into that very seriously. If it can be avoided, please avoid it in the light of these budget cuts. And I think, as we said earlier on in our discussion with NT, going forward, let's make sure that there is more interaction between yourselves and National Treasury so that you are fully taken on board. You are on the same page as far as these budget processes are concerned. Like you said, you were not fully consulted on these budget cuts. It was presented to you as a fait accompli. We want a situation where there are discussions. You may not necessarily be able to agree 100% with each other, but there is a need for engagement. And also that more interaction, more cooperation, collaboration, IGR processes with provincial legislature needs to be improved. As we said, and I think we are also agreeing to that, it will assist in cutting some of those costs that we continue to incur. And I hope you understood as well the issue of legal costs as raised. It's not necessarily about who you are instructing or briefing. We are saying as long as it has got legal cost implications, rather, on Parliament, we need to do something about it. For sure, that is very clear. So I thought I should emphasize on those, not necessarily to the exclusion of other issues that I may not have touched upon. Honourable Singh?
Chair, just a quick one. I don't know if you mentioned the stopgap measures for the Treasury Advice Office, because Treasury did say that they prepared to find a way until we fill that post permanently. So they must give us a report on what, how they're finding each other in that regard.
Okay, thank you very much. It arose also in our earlier discussion with National Treasury when they were here. Yeah, I think we have covered enough ground as far as this item is concerned. With regard to the other item that we were supposed to come and discuss tomorrow, I think it's the first quarter report, isn't it? Yeah, in discussion with colleagues, the agreement is that it should actually be deferred to when we come back, so that it gets discussed as part of a midterm. What do you call it? Midterm? Midterm report, you know? So meaning tomorrow, we are not going to have a meeting. Is that in order? Yeah, okay. So I thought I should clarify that. Having disposed of that and having concluded on the discussions as far as the main item of the meeting is concerned, it means we are almost at the end of this meeting, unless there is something that I'm missing out. Nothing. With that, once again, thank you very much, colleagues, for your attendance, deliberations. Thanks to our acting Secretary to Parliament for the presentations and the responses that you have given. And we look forward to getting feedback on the issues that we have raised and also making sure that the inputs that members have made indeed assist you in refining your final submissions to the executive authority, to National Treasury. Is there something? I'm advised here that transport is waiting outside for those who need transport, like me.
House is
not finished yet. Say
that again? I don't think the house is over.
No. As members of this committee, I think there's special arrangements that have been made for you, so that you don't have to wait for, unless if you want to go back, obviously. We from NCOP, who are done, so we're free to leave. So thank you very much. This meeting is not adjourned, it's closed.